they had a little bit of tape left over, so they said, come on, let's sneak into the studio. And 20th Century Fox never knew that they actually produced the first lesbian record.
Amazon Nation is about to rise.
Surely there's no need for me to lecture any gay guys out there on the finer points of shopping, but I do have some holiday tips to help save valuable time and money that you can later spend on yourself.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Queer equality advances in an Australian state and Canadian province. A proud Amazon explains why she was angry at this. And some holiday shopping tips to make the Yuletide gay. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 2 weeks ending December 7th, 2002. The unicameral legislature of the Australian state of Queensland this week passed the state government's sweeping law reform for equal treatment of lesbi-gays, transgenders, and same-gender couples. Those individuals will have explicit protection from discrimination and vilification, while unmarried cohabitants of at least 2 years' standing, regardless of gender, will have legal recognition equal to that of married couples under more than 50 state laws. The bill's success came only after 18 hours of emotional debate and a division between the opposition parties, as the National Party stood against the bill while the Liberal Party supported the Australian Labor Party government. The most divisive issue was prohibition of employment discrimination by religious groups for non-religious jobs, including teachers in church-run schools. With the support of the National Party, religious groups lobbied hard for an exemption, meeting with Premier Peter Beattie among other protracted negotiations with officials, and ultimately the government did back down to some degree. While the religious groups can no longer deny employment at will based on sexual orientation or marital status, they will be able to ask job candidates about their religious beliefs and values, and to require that, as Attorney General Rod Welford put it, a person should not act in their work or in connection with their work in a way that demonstrates open defiance of the religious beliefs.
The legislature of the Canadian province of Alberta this week also quietly passed its Conservative Party government's omnibus bill to recognize cohabitants in a dependent situation rather than spouses in numerous state laws. It's a landmark move for a province that's a right-wing stronghold, even though it potentially offers the same status to roommates and cohabiting relatives as it does to gay and lesbian and heterosexual couples. Nonetheless, it was overshadowed by another advance for Alberta's gay and lesbian couples, as the tribunal barred the practice of charging them for health coverage at individual rather than family rates. Canada's national health care plan is administered by each province, with Alberta requiring individual adult payments of $34 Canadian and family payments of $68 for coverage including children.
Belgium is a step closer to becoming the world's second nation to open legal marriage to same-gender couples, with a Senate vote last week approving the government's bill by a 3-to-1 margin. Belgium's lower house has yet to vote on the measure. Only the Netherlands now offers full equal marriage rights to gays and lesbians. The Belgian bill would not allow same-gender couples to adopt children together and would not legally recognize non-biological co-parents.
Mexico City's pioneering bill to extend legal recognition to gay and lesbian and unmarried heterosexual couples won unanimous approval last week from a committee and has moved on to review by the full city council, known as the Legislative Assembly.
A lesbian inmate in Colombia has won a long-running legal battle for visitation with her partner, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission reports. Marta Alvarez has struggled since 1998 to gain the same visitation rights enjoyed by non-gay inmates in Colombia, and in 1999 her case became the first issue of sexual orientation discrimination ever brought before the Inter-American Human Rights Commission. Alvarez has been punished for seeking the chance to see her partner, who is also an inmate now held at a prison in a different city. But in late November, a local judge finally granted her petition, citing the partner's rights to equality, privacy, and free development of their personalities.
Switzerland's government last week announced its proposal for legal gay and lesbian registered partnerships carrying most of the benefits of marriage. while extending equality in areas including inheritance and Social Security, and explicitly requiring that partners accord each other assistance and respect, the bill would deny couple adoption rights. Advocates for gay and lesbian equality are hopeful the government proposal will be expanded in the parliament when it's taken up in the coming year. In announcing the cabinet's move, Justice Minister Ruth Metzler said, "The picture of same-sex couples hugging and kissing on the street should become normal." But while the Swiss cantons of Zurich and Geneva have already extended their local legal recognition to same-gender couples, the Valais canton's parliament immediately voted by an 11% margin to declare its opposition to the national bill, citing support for the family.
Britain's government will be introducing a bill to create registered partnerships for gays and lesbians, perhaps as soon as the next session of parliament, Minister for Social Exclusion and Equalities Barbara Roche announced this week. The proposal is expected to give registered partners legal status equal to that of married couples in areas including property, tenancy and inheritance rights, inheritance taxes, crime victim compensation, and hospital visitation. A draft will be published for discussion in mid-2003.
As the new head of the 70-million-member Global Anglican Communion was officially confirmed in his office this week, he declared in a BBC documentary that he believes that a strong case can be made that the church should recognize what he called faithful homosexual relationships and that they are not in conflict with the Bible. That contrasts sharply with the opinion of a large majority of the world's Anglican bishops, who voted overwhelmingly at their 1998 global conference that homosexual acts are incompatible with biblical teachings. However, new Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams, who at least once in the past knowingly crossed church policy to ordain a sexually active gay man, told the Church Times that he will abide by the church's ban on ordaining non-celibate gays, apparently caving in to serious pressure from conservative Anglicans. Williams, who won't fully assume his duties until February, has called for honest debate on the issues.
Britain's Crown Prosecution Service last week issued its first-ever public policy statement on hate crimes against lesbi-gay and transgender people. Attorney General Lord Goldsmith declared that homophobic crimes strike at people's right to feel safe and secure, and to abuse or attack someone because of their sexual orientation and gender identity is a hate crime which cannot be tolerated. The CPS today sends a clear message to those who commit such crimes that they will be dealt with firmly under criminal law. The CPS hopes in particular to encourage more victims to report hate incidents, as less than one-fifth do now, according to a National Advisory Group study.
In the U.S., Pennsylvania Governor Mark Schweiker this week signed into law the addition of new categories, including sexual orientation, to the state's hate crimes law. Schweiker resisted considerable pressure to veto expansion of the so-called ethnic intimidation law. It was only this week that the Pennsylvania House of Representatives approved the bill by a margin of about 3-2, although the state Senate had approved it by a better than 2-1 margin almost a year and a half before.
The Orlando, Florida City Council this week gave its final approval to a bill to add sexual orientation as a category protected under city ordinances from discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations. The hotly debated bill squeaked through by a one-vote margin. Although Mayor Glenda Hood was vocal in her opposition, her spokesperson said it is highly unlikely that she'll veto it.
After years of lobbying, the city councils of Baltimore, Maryland, and San Jose, California, have both voted unanimously to protect transgenders from discrimination. The Baltimore bill will make gender identity or expression a category protected under city ordinances from discrimination in employment, housing, education, public accommodations, and credit. It was Mayor Martin O'Malley who asked the council to consider the bill, and his signature will make Baltimore the first city in Maryland to protect transgenders. San Jose will be adding transgender protections to its city employment policies against discrimination and harassment.
The United States Supreme Court this week agreed to take up a constitutional challenge to Texas's law against homosexual acts. It will be the High Court's first consideration of states' rights to criminalize those acts since it narrowly upheld a now-defunct Georgia law in 1986 in Bowers v. Hardwick. Similar to Bowers, the Texas plaintiffs, John Lawrence and Tyrone Garner, were busted by sheriffs while engaging in consensual sex in one plaintiff's own bedroom, in their case when a neighbor falsely reported a weapons disturbance in that home. A dozen other states' laws applying solely to sex acts between people of the same gender will also be at stake.
And finally, the Cracker Barrel restaurant chain, ubiquitous in the southern U.S., was once notorious for anti-gay employment discrimination. In 1991, it fired at least 11 gay and lesbian employees in the wake of a corporate memo that called for removing those whose sexual preferences failed to demonstrate normal heterosexual values, which had been the foundation of families in our society. That set off a long-running series of protest actions of many kinds, which led Cracker Barrel to disavow the memo. Some protesters eventually won a landmark ruling by the Securities and Exchange Commission that revived shareholder-initiated proposals for a new era of social justice activism in the corporate sphere. More recently, new Cracker Barrel management had publicly declared an end to the practice of discrimination based on sexual orientation, but held out against adopting a formal written policy to that effect. Until this week, that is, when the board of directors of Cracker Barrel's parent corporation, CBRL Group Incorporated, announced that it has unanimously agreed to add sexual orientation to the categories protected by its non-discrimination policy. The board acted in the belief that a solid majority of shareholders would pass a resolution calling for the policy change when it came to a vote for the 10th time.
That's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending December 7th, 2002, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
If you're still making a list and checking it twice, you're sure to get help, or at least enjoy some laughs, from The Gay Guy's Guide to Stuffing His Christmas Stocking, later in the program. This Way Out's resident queer musicologist J.D. Doyle, who co-hosts our monthly audiophile segment, also produces Queer Music Heritage for KPFT in Houston, Texas. As part of his tireless work preserving and promoting that heritage, he recently had the chance to chat with the first openly queer singer to ever record a 45 RPM. That's when music singles were called Stacks of Wax, kids.
Many of you may know that the first openly lesbian album was by Alex Dobkin and was called Lavender Jane Loves Women, from 1974. But this feature will deal with an even earlier record, the very first openly lesbian 45, and I have the artist to tell us about it. She's Maxine Feldman, and in 1969, she wrote the song Angry Athos and recorded it 3 years later. Here's a little bit of that historic song.
I hate not being able to hold my lover's hand, sat under some dim lilied table, afraid of being who I am. I hate to tell lies, live in the shadow of fear. We run half of our lives from that damn word queer.
Maxine, tell us about Angry Athos.
Okay. Angry Athos, I wrote May 13th, 1969. And I hadn't been playing the guitar for years because I had been thrown off the Boston Coffee House circuit back in 63 for being queer and bringing around the wrong crowd. And I had just left Boston, and I'd been living down in New York too, and Mayor Lindsay had sent these cops into gay bars where they would imitate gay guys, and as soon as the guys went outside, they would bust them. Now, that was called entrapment, but it wasn't called entrapment then. So there were many things, you know, being thrown out of college, always having to hide who you were. It got me so damn angry that one night when I arrived in Los Angeles, California, it was the first night I arrived, I wrote Angry Athos, and it just came spewing forth. It just talked about everything that I was angry about, not being able to hold my lover's hand. We're not child molesters. We're not this. You know, we're not that. And I just figured, well, the best way to put it sometimes was in a song, and this was prior, as you know, since it was May 13th, prior to the gay movement as we know it today. But it was in the air. I mean, what happened, you know, in Stonewall on Christopher Street in the end of June, it was in the air. It was bound to happen. And I think for everyone across the country, whether they lived in a small town or a large city, we were all getting very tired of being invisible and losing our jobs, losing our schools, losing our parents. you know, who didn't understand us, people trying to convert us. Well, we know that that does not work. Me being queer is like breathing. So does that kind of,
That's a pretty good start. Where did you get the title for the song?
All right, Athos is one of Sappho's lovers. And I had, of course, read Sappho, the lesbian poet. And originally I was going to call it Sappho's, you know, sadness or something. And I went, no, let me call it Angry Athos. And anyone who will know who Athos is, if they've read Sappho, they will know that Athos was one of her many lovers. So, and when you also look at the words, if you look at Angry Athos, which is spelled A-T-T-H-I-S, it also, if you separate the words out, it becomes Angry at This. So it was kind of a double, I like words, so it was kind of a double meaning.
How did you meet up with Robin Tyler? She kind of got the ball rolling, didn't she?
Well, she recorded the song, and then Robin and, well, she was with her partner then, Patty Harrison, it was Harrison and Tyler. They performed on the college campus. Well, I knew they were queer, and they came over to the Women's Center, and I played Angry Athos, and Robin said, you're going to open up our act. And for a year, I toured in front of them wherever they played in California and did Angry Athos, and in the interim, I was writing more material. And actually, 20th Century Fox, because they had just done an album, Harrison and I had just done an album called Wonder Woman, and they had a little bit of tape left over, so they said, come on, let's sneak into the studio, and 20th Century Fox never knew that they actually produced the first lesbian record. And Patty, Robin, and myself went everywhere, and, you know, we could hardly give the record away. People were still so closeted and so, how could you be so, you know, how can you be like that? How, all that pride, all that, you know, it was like, and I would look at them and say, well, how come you're not? So that was great. And there was always audience there, and there were always young women and young men who thought they were the only ones. And by my being so out front, they'd come over to me after and talk to me, and I'd tell them, you know, what, where they could go, et cetera, et cetera. And I know about that uncomfortableness, and I know that, oh God, am I the only one? I knew how that felt, and I knew it felt awful. And so I just thought of myself as a bridge and played every place I possibly could.
Please tell us about Amazon.
Okay. I was living in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. This was 76. And I woke up from a dream, it seemed like. And these words just poured, started to, you know, a melody started to flow. And I was, wow, this is really amazing. And I got to play it for the first time publicly at National Women's Music Festival. And that was just the first time it got the audience response. And the audience just went wild for it. And I was like, okay. And now it's used, it's sung, it's part of the opening ceremony of the Michigan Women's Music Festival every year. So whether I'm there or not, I'm there.
That was Maxine Feldman talking about the first openly lesbian record, Angry Athos, and her lesbian anthem, Amazon. This is J.D. Doyle for This Way Out, and here's a little bit of the song, Amazon.
Amazon, women rise. Amazon, women weaving rainbows in the sky. Amazon, women Amazon, women fly. The goddess has not forsaken thee. She's just reawakening you and me. Heal yourselves, practice your craft of the wise. Amazon nation is about to rise. Amazon women rise. Amazon women waving rainbows in the sky. Amazon women fly.
In 2002, Audiophile presented more wonderfully out gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered musicians than ever before, with an extraordinary array of artists and musical styles. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. We'll get 2003 started with a look back at the best in queer music of the year gone by, as we present our annual Audiophile Year in Review, when we pop the cork on a brand new year of This Way Out.
The International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
Hi, I'm Margaret Cho.
Hello, this is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm comedian Bob Smith.
Hi, I'm Kate Clinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
Hi, I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, I'm Scott Thompson.
Hi, I'm David Sedaris.
Hi, this is Jeff Straker.
Hi, this is Chastity Bono, and you're listening to
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
Gay men around the world are preparing for the holidays. In their own inimitable ways, of course. Our correspondent Bruce Wheeler in Madison, Wisconsin, offers his suggestions for making the Yuletide especially gay.
I feel pretty, oh so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and bright. And I pity any boy who isn't me tonight.
Ah, Christmas. So many reasons to be jolly. Boys strut around town with their packages on display, all nice and tightly wrapped. People tell you to show up with bells on, and you can. The male population increases dramatically thanks to all the snowmen in people's yards, and for one brief period of time, we get to turn our attention to the other garland. A welcome bonus is that seasonally mandated goodwill toward men, which, when combined with a sprig of mistletoe deftly removed from a coat pocket and held aloft, is an open invitation for lip-locking sexy shoppers in the mall. Best of all, it's the season when receiving is less of a threat to your masculinity, and giving has nothing to do with sore knees. It's the subject of giving that brings me to my topic, the gay guy's guide to stuffing his Christmas stocking. There's surely no need for me to lecture any gay guys out there on the finer points of shopping, but I do have some holiday tips to help save valuable time and money that you can later spend on yourself. Start by making your list. Once drafted, you should follow that age-old adage and check it twice. Believe it or not, this really helps. If you're not sure whether someone's naughty or nice, just stop for a moment and reflect. Should a smile find its way to your lips and your tush turn tingly? He's a definite naughty. Proceed accordingly. When considering that special something for your many special someones, i.e. beaux past, present, and hopeful, I encourage you to put aside petty little gripes, unless that is, those gripes are particularly inspiring and can be incorporated into a gift. For example, for the chum who always says he'll call but never does, the Lily Tomlin-approved telephone operator Barbie. For the anal-retentive decorator, and we all know one, whose home is a symphony of white, white, and more white, a dog. A big black dog that sheds really long hair. Drooling and incontinence are not required, but are icing on the proverbial cake. And speaking of cake, for the friend who steadfastly watches the calorie and fat intake at each and every meal, whether at home or out on the town, a subscription to the Cheesecake of the Month Club. Just a side note, if you're wondering what to get for me, I prefer the Beefcake of the Month Club. As for the actual exchange of department store credit for items on the list, it's critical that you know not where to shop, but where not to shop. First, gay guys do not buy presents at any store whose name ends with Mart. Second, gay guys do not buy presents at any store their straight friends pronounce with a French accent, like Target or Jacques Penney. And third, gay guys do not buy presents at any store whose main product line is power tool related. Unless we're talking about the kind of power tool Jeff Stryker is famous for, in which case gay guys buy presents there all the time. Usually for themselves, though. Next, decide how much to spend. This is always a delicate issue, so I've developed a mathematical formula to solve the problem once and for all. Are you ready? Take the number of times you slept with him and multiply that by the number of times he spent the night. Divide that number by the number of times he didn't warm the washcloth and subtract the number of times he totally skipped the first hour and a half of foreplay. Root the square, move the decimal point two places to the left, and that's your final number. Well, not quite final. As per usual, take your final number and add 2 inches. There's a myriad of subjects related to Christmas I'd like to address, like the no of artificial trees. But in the interest of time, I really should stay focused on the topic at hand. However, having brought up the subject of artificial trees, I should at least mention that fake wood is an excellent gift for your favorite single gal pal. Other suggestions? For the guys on your list, it's best to stay clear of nutcrackers. For the hard-to-buy-for on your list, hit the neighborhood garage sales over the next few days. Thanks to our collective image as trendsetters, any item given by a gay guy will automatically be hip and cutting-edge, no matter how tacky it really is. If you were a lesbian, it would be junk, and you would be cheap. Sorry, girls. Sometimes life isn't fair. And finally, the lightning round of gift-giving for that moment you realize it's the 24th and not the 16th. For the acquaintance into piercing, antique chandelier crystals to hang from his nipple rings. For that daddy bear you work out with, an I Heart Goldilocks t-shirt. No one else at the gym will get it, but the two of you will chuckle every time someone walks by and says, "Oh, my little girl would love one of those." And for your favorite hardcore leather lover, a Barbra Streisand CD. Just trust me on this one. And for all the guys at the bar, dreidels, which, in case you're completely and totally lacking in cultural literacy, are tops. And we all know what a welcome gift those are. Well, that's about it for this gay guy and my guide to stuffing his Christmas stocking. In closing, a quick word about gay apparel. Rented outfits of faux fur and red flannel don't qualify. However, a custom version that's short, sassy, belted, and looks good with sparkly fishnets and 4-inch heels most certainly does. Oh, and one final bit of advice. When stocking the hunk by the chimney, use care. With the Gay Guy's Guide in Madison, Wisconsin, this is Bruce Wheeler for This Way Out.
I feel pretty, oh so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and bright. And I pity any boy who isn't me tonight. I feel charming, oh so charming. It's a lime, how charming I feel.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, John Beaupre, J.D. Doyle, and Bruce Wheeler contributed program material. Thanks also to Amber Ault. Little Richard performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Arcus Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KUOI Moscow, Idaho, WMNF Tampa, Florida, Planet FM, Auckland, New Zealand, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Ho, ho, ho! Stay tuned.